Tottenham's 4-0 win at Aston Villa last weekend threw the race for Champions League spots wide open. And while the accepted wisdom among some football experts is that it takes a few transfer windows to truly turn a team around, Ange Postecoglou seems to have made a mockery of that. The Australian has introduced a clear style, and not only are Spurs in the mix for a top four finish, but they're also playing exciting football, and all without club legend Harry Kane. I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is Football Only Better. My top tipping team, all club legends, starting with Mark O'Hare. Mark, a startling win for Tottenham at Villa Park, all the more so because they actually looked a little vulnerable in the first half at various stages. But can you see Tottenham pushing on and securing a Champions League spot now?
Yeah, I definitely think it's well within their realms. You look at the squad that they're able to field now, pretty much a fully fit squad, bar Mickey van der Ven, who's now injured for this weekend, which is a blow. But we talked all through the campaign how they were picking up positive results quite consistently, really, despite the injury issues. And then we get into the winter period, and then you're looking towards that, the African Cup of Nations and the Asian Cup, and you're again losing key players. And it's been quite hard for Tottenham to pick a first choice 11 routinely this season, but they were able to do that last weekend against Aston Villa. As you say, they survived a few scary moments in that first half, but really showed their class in the second. I actually thought Unai Emery probably got his tactical approach a little bit wrong last weekend and played into Spurs' hands at times, but yeah, I mean, you saw the fullbacks come back into the team last weekend, Udogi and Pedro Porro, and they make such a difference too. So, you know, you say Postecoglou's making a mockery, really. I think he really has, because he's embarrassing a lot of high-quality coaches, especially in the top half of that division at the minute, by making such a difference so quickly. And it's quite refreshing to see the trail he's leaving back home, because my missus is Australian. Her dad isn't necessarily a soccer fan, shall I say. But Postecoglou is making Australian news quite regularly at the minute, so he's able to follow what's going on. And yeah, he's been a bit of a trailblazer, really. I'm really impressed and really quite pleased to see how successful he's been so quickly. I've been really enjoying Tottenham. As you say, you want a team. Most of these supporters at top end clubs don't just want to see successful football. They want to see entertaining football. And you know, we've been putting the knife into Erik ten Hag and Manchester United this season, often. Pochettino and Chelsea, and that's because someone like Postecoglou has got into Spurs and revolutionised things almost immediately. And as you say, they've done it all without Harry Kane, which is utterly remarkable, really. They're playing really exciting, entertaining, attacking football, and the results have been very, very positive. So I'm really looking forward to their game this weekend against Fulham. Fulham comfortably clear yet of relegation danger. So, you know, they're always a threat at Craven Cottage, and I think they will play with freedom this weekend. And that should in theory sort of lend itself to being another kind of exciting open game involving Spurs. And yeah, Tottenham have been absolutely terrific in terms of going forward on their travels under Ange. You know, they've scored at least twice in 11 of 13 away days in the Premier League this season, which is like unbelievably good, kind of better than Man City levels at their peak, really. They're averaging 2.31 goals per game away from home, but they've also conceded at least twice on 8 occasions in those 13 fixtures. So, you know, over 3.5 goals, the winner last weekend has been a regular winner when Tottenham play away from home this season. But over 2.5 goals has just been almost a gimme in Spurs matches now for months on end, really. They've played 18, well, their last 18 Premier League games, 17 have seen over 2.5 goals. 16 of those have seen BTTS. Just outrageous numbers, really, but we've come to expect as kind of part and parcel of Postecoglou and Tottenham. So for this match at the weekend, I'll be focusing on goals first and foremost. I think overs has to be the bedrock of any selection involving Tottenham right now, but I do believe Fulham can play their part in that. They're averaging 2 goals per game across their last 6 games. BTTS has landed in 5 of those 6. They've scored at least twice in half of their 14 at the Cottage. And actually on 6 occasions, they scored at least 3 goals in front of their own supporters too. And you look at their overs record from their last 17 games, it's hitting 14 games across all venues. So they're extremely accustomed to high-scoring fixtures too. And as we've talked about it regularly on this season's podcast, the Premier League has seen a big hike in goals per game and over 2.5 goals hit rates. It's up to 65% now this season, which is a 12% increase on over 2.5 goals hit rates from last season. And in comparison, the Bundesliga stands at 62%. So the Premier League is the place to be for goals at the minute. So you can understand why overs is still quite a short price coming into this game. But to boost it to something more palatable, just include both teams to be carded, and you're getting close to even money here, which really does appeal. Robert Jones is the referee. He's averaging 5.12 cards through 17 league games so far this season. He's hit four or more in 88% of those. And in terms of Fulham and Spurs, they've each received at least one card in 89% of their Premier League matches this season. So, yeah, as I said, Van der Ven missing for Spurs, their best defender. That's a bit of a blow for them defensively, but they're pretty much at full strength everywhere else. I believe Richarlison is due back in the squad this weekend. And as for Fulham, similar story with Raul Jimenez. I believe he's due back in the squad this weekend. That was the word last week. And apart from him, if he's not fit, they've got a fully fit squad. And, you know, they're in that sort of nice position now where they can kind of just afford to almost use this as a bit of a free hit and try and enjoy themselves and embrace the entertaining nature of Spurs. So, yeah, very much looking forward to this game. I think over 2.5 goals and both teams to be carded close to evens is the way to play it.
As Mark says, Postecoglou making a real splash in Australia and closing in on a world record, actually. Most interviews done while looking entirely at the floor. So good luck to him for the rest of the season on that one. Trader, tipster and renowned collector of antique weapons, Emmett O'Keefe, is with us. Emmett, we've seen Fulham win at Manchester United recently. We know that they can take on teams who are pushing for the top four. They're not pushovers at all, are they? And in Muniz, they've got a striker who's in super form.
Definitely. I think we've kind of seen the difference in Fulham teams with the kind of coherent striker. Like we saw last season, they were at their best, obviously, when Mitrovic was playing so well. And to be honest, I thought Marcus Silva did well to get as much out of it as he did as Raul Jimenez, who's definitely a declining player. But Muniz is a kind of far more vibrant and far more dangerous player. And I've seen a better Fulham as a result. Yeah, so Fulham are interesting. Like I've kind of maybe made the mistake in the past at looking at them, some of their expected goals data. But if you look at the kind of models that are purely based on shots, their data is quite poor. But if you look at kind of other models that look at kind of more game control models, their data is that bit better. And again, like I thought coming into the season with the players they've lost, I thought they'd be pushing for relegation. So I think it's kind of probably might not be spoken about too much, but I think for Marco Silva to have them in the position they've been without a particularly big budget is actually an excellent achievement. Just with Tottenham, I was just looking at a few numbers. I really like the key pass statistic for the Premier League. It's kind of a key pass is basically a pass that leads to a shot. So it's a good indicator of who the most creative players. Tottenham have four players in the top 25 in the Premier League in that statistic. So that just shows you, I think, I think it's partly due to the quality of players they have, but also they're being with Ange's system and constantly having players in kind of perpetual motion and kind of and moving into space. It leads to a more potent attack. I think the days of like relying on the Mavericks Maverick players to create your chance are long since gone. Spurs clearly have an attacking system, and it's better than the vast majority of teams in the Premier League.
That's a really interesting point that you raise, because I've been thinking about this a lot recently. Teams that, and we're going to come on to Manchester United in the Sunday show when they take on Liverpool, of course. They're the ones I always think of. But there are teams that try and beat you with, and Bayern have got this at the moment in Germany. There are teams that will beat you with individual quality, and they'll basically say, well, if our main guys do something cool, we'll probably win the game. It's fine. But they're not beating anybody with the system. That's the thing. And it's actually the more sustainable teams who are beating you. Yes, of course, it relies on individual quality to a certain extent, but they're actually beating you with the way they play rather than just hoping that their stars are going to come up with something unusual.
Exactly, and as well, because that makes you more less fragile in terms of more injury proof. I think we've seen Spurs if lose nearly all of their best creative players in terms of Madison, Son at kind of different points of the season. Obviously, their form has suffered, but it didn't fall off a cliff. I think which is the crucial thing. And now they have most of their players back, and they have the advantage of kind of being out of the cup competitions and not playing in Europe. So it's pretty much set fair for the rest of the season for Tottenham. Obviously, the Van de Ven injury is not ideal, but I think with their kind of, the only one warning I'd have for Spurs fans, there are a little bit of shades of Newcastle, I would say, in terms of how intense the Spurs kind of press is and their style of play is. And it's just reality. It's much easier to kind of implement that style of play, playing less matches. So I do think they will have to be clever this summer in terms of the transfer market, and not be thinking that like Newcastle, in the sense of buying players for the future, like Livermento and Lewis Hall. Like they'll probably need 3 or 4 players for now, and kind of make them more injury proof for next season.
Yeah, it has to be quantity over quality in a way, won't it? Because you actually just need those bodies.
Yeah,
you're going to get people picking up loads of muscle injuries
and players who could contribute and who the manager trusts. I would say, I think that's obviously easier said than done. But I think, to be fair, Daniel Levy, I've given him massive criticism in this podcast, but like, I think their summer business was exceptional last summer, both in terms of the managerial appointment and in terms of the player signed. And hopefully more of the same. We'll kind of see this kind of the Andrew evolution become sustainable. Like Mark, I don't have a bet for this game, but I'll definitely look at overs. And just from a kind of a neutral point of view, I think to me there's no more fun team in the league than Tottenham, because obviously they're at such a potent side in attack, but also just because the way they play, they inevitably give up chances. So it's just, it's very hard for Tottenham to be in a bad game. And I think if, to be honest, if you've the choice between 2 games at 5:30 this weekend, some poor scheduling really in terms of the Premier League and the FA Cup, where you have Newcastle v Man City and Fulham v Tottenham at the same time, I definitely lean towards the Tottenham game. I think that'll be far more interesting game than, I think it'll probably be a one-sided bloodbath in City v Newcastle.
Yes, we'll come on to that later on. Finally, we're joined by Sky Sports' Lewis Jones. Lewis, I know you're very excited about the Cheltenham Festival. If you're listening to this before the festival, of course, if it's all gone, then, you know, that's in the past. It's happened. Life moves quickly. It's the way it works. Lewis, what about this game?
As Emmett referenced there, it's going to be a really good game, I think, this on Saturday night. Spurs have scored in their last 39 Premier League games. It's the longest current scoring run in the Premier League, and is the second longest in Premier League history. So that just showcases just how what a great watch they are. And that record actually of scoring in consecutive Premier League games is held by Arsenal, who scored in 55 in May to between May 2001 and November 2002. So they could potentially go and chase that down. They've got such a clinical team, aren't they? In forward areas, I mean, they've outperformed their XG for most of the season in attack. But I would trust the numbers on in that regard, just because they've got such excellent finishers. I just think Son and Richarlison, they regularly outperform their XG, and that's not a fluke. So that, I think that's why they can be trusted to as a team that you can trust to push that over 2.5 line, as Mark has referenced. It's something which has hit so many times this season, hasn't it? But for all their sort of swashbuckling attacking in the second half versus Villa, I thought last week, my theory that I said on the podcast about them being slow starters, I think still does have legs. Actually, they had just one shot in the first half at Villa Park, and obviously failed to score. Meaning they failed to score now in 5 of their last 6 first halves. And they've only had 25...
It's very strange, isn't it? For a team that's so, as you say, quite swashbuckling, quite adventurous, score lots of goals. Why are they so dozy in the opening exchanges of games?
It's hard to put a finger on it, really, because, again, I think maybe stopping the service into Madison in that key area, which I mentioned that last week, and Villa did defend a little bit more in numbers last week, didn't they? They decided to go to 5 at the back and sort of restrict Spurs' ability to get the fullbacks into the game. So maybe that's that could explain why they can't really open up in the first half. And Fulham are very good at stopping teams, aren't they, from playing? Marco Silva's he's a very shrewd manager in terms of stopping an opposition. And Fulham have only conceded one goal in the first 15 minutes of matches this season. No team have got a better record than that. So I can see Marco Silva sort of keeping it tight early on, and which could pave the way for another sort of low scoring first half. But I can't for a second week running tip up half-time's correct score at 0-0 after what Manchester United and Everton served up in the first half last week. It was 2-0, wasn't it? Apologies to those that got onto the treble, because my leg was the one that let us all down. So apologies for all that. got greedy chasing the price, which is probably the story of my life, really.
These things happen.
Indeed, indeed. But I'm going to play a similar type of bet this week, but without the jeopardy of that one goal killing the bet in the first half. So it's the second half to have more goals than the first half, which is coming up at even money. And I think that is a slice of value, just looking at the numbers. So this means even if there is a first half goal, the bet is still live, and we just need just the second half to outscore the first. So it's a little bit more sort of palatable for punters to get involved, and it's more of an enjoyable bet to sort of cheer on. And as I think we referenced this last week, didn't we, about the huge spike in stoppage time goals this season, and that is seen through the overall half total goals, first and second half. So second halves are absolutely thrashing the first halves in that regard. So in 278 Premier League games this season, there's been 369 first half goals, and there's been 531 second half goals. Wow. So 162 more goals in the second half, which is, it's quite quite a conclusive bit of evidence really there. And that is leading to this bet of more second half goals than the first landing a bit more frequently than usual. So it's landed in 52% of Premier League games this season, including 8 of Tottenham's last 11 games across all competitions. So the second half producing more goals than the first. And that weight of evidence sort of equates to my numbers for having the second half to have more goals than the first, around 58%, so 8 to 11. So I think the even money that we're getting on the second half producing more goals than the first looks like a bet to me.
I know you're not supposed to do anything that ages a podcast. I understand that. I've been in this game. However, give us a tip for Cheltenham anyway, Lewis. I know you're going there.
Yeah, no, I'm going on Friday, Gold Cup Day. Looking forward to it. One of my key sort of punting theories and for Cheltenham is always trust the previous festival form. So I've got my eyes on Corrick Rambler in the Gold Cup on Friday. He's not done it at the top level yet, but he's won twice at the festival in handicap company. So he's got to step up to the top level. And he always turns up when it's on the big days. He won the Grand National last season. I think he's been forgotten about in the betting. This is his time of year. I think anything bigger than 14-1 each way is something I wouldn't want to be laying. So yeah, maybe there's one for the Gold Cup on Friday. Corrick Rambler.
And if you're listening to this on Friday night or Saturday, Lewis is either going to look like a genius or you can all have a good snigger at him if his horse basically just left the course and just wandered off or something terrible happened. So there we go. Injury time goals can be a pain in the pocket if they ruin your bet. So now you've got 90-minute payout to rescue you if the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands. Your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's in the description. 18+, begambleaware.org. Oh, Luton suffered a disastrous defeat at Bournemouth in midweek. A 3-0 lead squandered in a 4-3 loss. Lewis, they've got Forest in the league next. How on earth do they pick themselves up after that?
Wow, what an incredible game that was last night. So 8:15 last night with Luton 3-0 up. I was sort of siding towards them here at 6-4 in the sports book. But then an hour later, after what happened in the second half, to lose 4-3 in that sort of fashion, I can't go near them now. I mean, results like that can have a huge effect, can't they, on confidence, just general belief. So I'd have to see. I wouldn't want to get involved with them until I've seen how they react, really. So even though I do think they're the most sort of likely winners of the match, I'm going to swerve the outright price on Luton. Also want to swerve Nottingham Forest as well after what they showed last week at Brighton. They were so disappointing. Brighton were absolutely there for the taking in that game. And Forest had 2 shots in the last 25 minutes of the game. And this is playing against a team that was...
Pathetic, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it was a lifeless showing. They were playing against a team that was full of injury hit. And clearly their confidence is low. And they've just been on a journey to Roma and back where they got absolutely spanked, didn't they? So Brighton were there for the taking. And it was just such a lifeless showing from Nottingham Forest, and so they played like with a bit of a resignation already that they're just staring down the barrel of relegation. And I know that the unknown situation regarding the sort of points deduction is maybe having an impact on the players and the fans, and I can have sympathy with them in that regard, because it is a ridiculous situation that they're waiting to see if their season is going to completely change with another points deduction. So, but I actually haven't got any sympathy with the way that the manager and the club are going about talking about refereeing decisions at the moment. It's starting to really sort of grind my gears.
Yeah.
I say all Nuno wanted to talk about in the post-match was like the borderline conspiracy theories against Nottingham Forest and referees in the Premier League. So I think the quote was, he said, "Why always us?" Which is a tad over the top for me. And it was regarding
the help that they've hired Mark Plattenberg as this referee analyst. What's a pointless job?
Yeah, that it adds to it, doesn't it? It's just a complete farce. And they were talking about the tackle, weren't they, from Jacob Moda on Nico Williams? And yes, it probably was a red card, but I would argue that even if Brighton went down to 10 men, Forrest wouldn't have scored, playing with such a lack of sort of guile and enthusiasm in the final third. So, if they should be using these so-called injustices as a potential sort of motivational tool to the players, but I couldn't see that in their performance at all at Brighton. Just so disappointing. And I just think in football, it's such a subjective game from a refereeing point of view, isn't it? You're not going to get pure consistency throughout. You get some decisions, you don't. And I know it's a cliche, but it does even itself out over the season, I think, in my opinion. So I just think Nuno's just got to concentrate on getting his players played with more oomph and more belief. It's going to be a very tough test for them actually at Luton. If they're in the same sort of mood as they were in at the Amex, then Luton do have a good chance. So yeah, I can't back Luton. I can't back Forest. Score draw is probably a runner at 16-5, but again, not really a bet I want to get involved with. So it's going to be set pieces where my sort of punting instincts have taken me here. Forest have conceded the most goals from set pieces this season in the Premier League. So that's 18, and that's four more than any other team. And 10 of those have actually come since Nuno took the job in December. So he's had no impact whatsoever on improving sort of the defensive standards from set pieces. And they couldn't cope with Pascal Gross's delivery last week, which proved the avenue for the opening goal that Brighton scored. So I can see Luton's set-piece wizard, Alfie Doughty, likely to do the same for Luton here. Very sort of set-piece oriented team, aren't they, Luton? High percent of their goals come from set-pieces, and Doughty is one of the best crossers in the league. He's had a great first season in the Premier League. Always like to see players that sort of relish the step up from the Championship to the Premier League, and he's racked up 7 assists. And no player has created more chances this season from set pieces than Doughty. So 32 chances he's created. But the markets have sort of caught up with his threat in the assist market. So he's now only sort of 11-4, a bit shorter than that to get an assist, which is short enough for me. So I decided to get a little bit rogue, maybe a little bit clever, and head to the shots market for the Luton centre-backs. And I've come down on Reece Burke, who has had 8 shots in his last 6 games for Luton, but he's priced up, actually, as the outsider in the entire market for one shot at even money, which I thought was very interesting. He's a sort of a real aggressive attacker of a set piece in the opposition box, a bit like sort of Harry Maguire is. So we just need him to get something on one of these sort of Doughty set pieces that goes towards goal. And it doesn't matter if it's on target. It doesn't matter if it goes near the goal. He just needs to connect, and hopefully Opta can register that as a shot. So the even money for him to have a shot in the game looks like the way to go for me.
I think one of the reasons that Nuno is being so passive aggressive at the moment is because he's realised that Marco Hare's beard is better than his. And he's very angry about this because a lot of Nuno's look is based around that beard, right? And he's looked at Mark and he's thought, oh no, he's doing it far better than me. Mark, how's this one going to go?
I'm looking forward to this game. I was slightly surprised. I mean, I did my notes on Wednesday morning before Luton played away at Bournemouth, and I was surprised to see Nottingham Forest as favourites at Kenilworth Road. And I ran the numbers myself through my own model, and it also made Forest favourites. Obviously, the underlying metrics are playing a key part in that. I'd struggle to recommend a bet on Forest this weekend at those kind of prices. They're at 2.6 away at Luton, regardless of really what happened on Wednesday night as well, because we've seen routinely this season beating Luton home or away is no easy task. You know, Bournemouth found that out on Wednesday night when they were 3-0 down at halftime. Sure, they turned it around, but even still, it kind of goes to show what kind of team Luton are capable of, or what they're capable of producing, I should say. But I was very tempted to go with them on the Asian handicap market, because you're getting a quarter goal start at 1.8 on the exchange. Forest have won just twice in their last 24 away league games. However, as I say, I did my notes before Wednesday, but that capitulation in the second half is an alarm bell. But as too has been the fact that both Burnley and Blades have won at Kenilworth Road this season, which to me suggests Luton are a bit more comfortable in their skin as an underdog rather than when the expectation is on. So I've opted to ignore the 1x2 and the handicaps and focus again on goals and cards. Obviously, this, I would say, is the biggest game of the season in terms of the basement battle. It's enormous, really, when you consider there's, what, 3 points between the two teams. Obviously, basement battles normally imply cards, and we've got a terrific refereeing appointment here. Darren England is on the whistle. He's averaging 5.88 cards across 17 league games this season. And during those 17 games, he's given at least five in 71% of those fixtures too. So the magnitude of the match suggests it could get quite tasty. Both teams also know how to mix it too. Luton have been booked in 85% of games, collecting two or more cards in 67%, averaging just under two cards per game. Forest have collected at least two cards in 75% of fixtures and averaged 2.46. So over 3.5 cards was my base here. And I think, to me, it makes complete sense just to back both teams to score, which gives us another even money shot here. I feel like I'm kind of parroting the same old stuff with Luton each week, really. But it's, again, just worth emphasising just how good Luton have been in front of goal, especially for a newly promoted side who have been written off as no-hopers before a ball was kicked, really. They played 28 Premier League games now. They've scored in 24 of those. Now, only the top three, the runaway top three, and Tottenham have a better hit rate for scoring this season than Luton. They may have scored more goals, but in terms of goals, games scored in, Luton's 24 from 28 is the fourth best or fifth best in the league, which is remarkable. At Kenilworth Road, they scored in 13 of 14. It's just defensively, they've been pretty inept, shall we say. Two clean sheets across the entirety of the Premier League. They've now shipped at least three goals in five of the last seven as well. So BTTS has landed in 11 of 14 at home. BTTS has landed in all 10 of their meetings with the bottom eight as well. And whilst I do hold similar concerns about Forest as Lewis in terms of their attacking output in the last couple of games, blanked in the last two. One was Liverpool, wasn't it? Which is, I guess, an understandable one. But last week was pretty poor. They had scored at least twice in seven of their previous nine. And you look at the team news, all the key attacking components are available. Awoniyi, Alanga, Gibbs-White, Hudson-Odoi, etc. So, but they've only kept four clean sheets all season as well. And the reverse game between Luton and Forest ended 2-2. So we've talked routinely, really, about the basement battles this season being quite entertaining, kind of going against the grain of six-pointers, which traditionally have been quite low attritional affairs. And I think the ingredients are in place here for another decent game. You know, you can't trust either defence. Both have plenty of attacking threats in forward areas. Luton need to win matches if they want to stay up. And Forest, you know, have to start looking at a potential points penalty and therefore need to start winning matches themselves to pull themselves clear of the relegation zone. So I think this could be really tasty. And I'm hoping for a couple of goals for each team too.
Burnley running out of games to save themselves from the drop, but Brentford need points to ease the pressure. They're on a really bad run. Emmett, this is quite a big relegation scrap, but you look at Burnley and they just don't look up to this level, do they?
No, although, yeah, they have played, really close to us, they have played a little bit better the last couple of weeks. Obviously, going to
Low
West
Low bar.
Low bar, yeah, the bar is the worst set level, but it does... I do think David Dr. Fofana is quite a good striker. He looks like, they wouldn't have stayed up, but I think if he'd been with them for the whole season, they definitely have maybe four or five more points, and they'd be they're kind of I think some of their approach play and their process can be quite good. Like we saw that against Bournemouth a couple of weeks ago, where they like territorially and like their pressing game and like parts of their game are quite good, but they obviously have a kind of a soft centre in defence. A vulnerable goalkeeper in James Trafford, and they just generally struggle to convert that kind of pressing and that kind of when they are on topping games, they struggle to convert it into goals. But I do think they can play their part in kind of a high scoring game here. Like I think it's nice. It's hard to find Premier League matches these days where you can get 1.8 or better on over 2.5 goals. That's what we have here. 71% of Brentford's matches have gone over 2.5 goals, I think, which kind of speaks to how, what we spoke about in the pod in the past, how their kind of defensive process is going to decline this year. And I just like the way, I think that the nature of the game with obviously Burnley are so far back for relegation that a draw does them no good here. So that should lead to kind of a more open affair and also, I think, quite possibly lead to Johan Vissa and Ivan Toney running amok on the counter-attack as kind of Burnley push forward. So I think kind of a high-scoring game which kind of Brentford Nick or Brentford Hammer Burnley in the counter, like all of those are fairly foreseeable. I just with the Boaty with Brentford's numbers, the Premier League generally being so goals heavy this year, and just the kind of the state of this game, all made me think that over 2.5 looks like a bit of value here.
It's FA Cup quarterfinal weekend. On our Sunday show, we're going to be focusing on the clash between Manchester United and Liverpool, but the tournament favourites, Manchester City, are up against Newcastle. Lewis, I commentated on Newcastle's game at Chelsea on Monday. I thought Newcastle looked really fragile in that game. I know they were gifted a goal when Isak scored, which is a ridiculous piece of play from Chelsea, but they did look as though they're running out of steam in quite a serious way. And Dan Burn, bless him, local lad and all that. Look, I get it. But he looked like a T-Rex trying to tap dance. It was utterly ridiculous, him at left back. And, you know, him going forward slows everything down. Him defensively in wide areas. I can't understand it at all.
Yeah, I do feel a bit sorry for Burn in a way. He wasn't getting much support, I didn't think, from other sort of. Anthony Gordon wasn't playing the position great in front of him in terms of helping him cover. I think that's more of the issue with Burn. He's in one-on-one situations, he is an absolute weak link in that Newcastle team, and it's becoming a bit. If idiots like me can see it, then I'm sure analysts at football clubs that are trying to plot their ways to beat Newcastle are obviously seeing that as well. So it's that left hand side is obviously a clear weakness for Newcastle at the moment, and they're in for a really long afternoon or a long evening, aren't they? At the Etihad, I think, on Saturday, and their season could be over after this game. I think there's not much to play for in the league out of all cup competitions. So, yeah, it looks ominous for them for the rest of the season. And Eddie Howe's going to have to conjure up all this sort of managerial nous and experience to just try and keep them motivated, I think, throughout the rest of the campaign. And here they're facing a team now that are sort of heading towards that double treble, aren't they? They're between 10 and 12 to 1 you can get in the industry on Man City winning their second treble in a row. So shouldn't have too many problems here getting through Newcastle, I wouldn't have thought. And just the fact that there's no replays in these fifth round and quarterfinal games just doesn't help Newcastle at all, I don't think. It's hard enough to try and get a result at Man City in 90 minutes, but then if you do manage to nick a draw, you've still got another 30 minutes to see them off. So, and interestingly, at this stage of the competition in the fifth round and the quarterfinals, draws are rarely seen. So since the FA scrapped replays in the fifth round and quarterfinals in the 1920 season, there have just been 7 draws in 56 fifth round or quarterfinal matches. So that's just a 12.5% strike rate. And I think it's the withdrawal of the replays is sort of making teams go all out for the win, I think, with the thought of extra time being a bit of a hindrance to their to the way they go about it. So, and you don't really get massive upsets at this stage of the competition either, which is a shame, because you talk about the FA Cup, the magic of the FA Cup, etc. Well, there's not been much magic in terms of giant killings or even sort of minor shocks at this stage of the season. So, you know, I ran the numbers here for games involving Man City, Manchester United, Arsenal, Liverpool, and Chelsea over the past 6 seasons. So that's 26 games when they've played in the fifth round of the quarterfinals. And they've won 24 of those 26 in 90 minutes, which is a ridiculous strike rate, really. And even those 2 defeats were inflicted by Leicester when Leicester were a top sort of 5 ranked team when they beat Manchester United and Chelsea. And they went on to win the FA Cup in 2021, I think. So it's really hard to make a case for Newcastle to get anything out, to even trouble City in this encounter, I think. And some may argue that Newcastle would be on that sort of Leicester level from last season, like being in and around the top 4, maybe top 5. But after
maybe last season, but yeah, not
exactly.
Now.
I mean, they've been so far away from those levels, haven't they? The intensity and sort of their defensive solidity and organisation is just all over the show. So, yeah, as you said, they played like their season was almost coming to an end at Chelsea. And I think Anthony Gordon is also out for this one with a knee injury. And the sort of the strength of those numbers for hot favourites in this stage of the competition makes me want to be with Man City here and to win in the 90 minutes. And this is obviously a team that have won the last 12 FA Cup games at home, scoring 52 goals, just lost one of their last 58 home matches in all competitions. But we're obviously going to need to get a little bit creative to turn those their home win odds of 1.28 on the exchange into something sort of more backable. It actually shows you the decline of Newcastle, actually, that City went off 1.86 in August to beat them at home in the Premier League. So to go from 1.86 to 1.28 in a few months, I think that just sums up perfectly the decline of Eddie Howe and Newcastle this season. So how do we get the price up? Got to head to the cards market, where there are some really sort of fancy prices for undercards in these type of FA Cup matches at this stage of the competition. So again, I ran the numbers on the last 56 FA Cup fifth round and quarter final matches, and the average yellow card count per match is just 2.07. So that's 116 yellow cards in 56 matches, which is ridiculously low when you consider that the average Premier League game this season has seen 4.5 cards. That's an absolute huge drop off. And it's actually something Andy Schooler referenced on betting.betfair. He's been writing about it, I think, this season, about his FA Cup low cards theory. And he actually landed a huge price of, I think it was about 22-1 on no cards shown between Manchester City and Luton in the last round. So that's another piece of evidence just to showcase the sort of the lack of intensity and the one-sided nature of the game. So So Man City to win quite comfortably. I think this could be another game that could go down another low card avenue. So we can actually get that City to win price nearer to even money if we head to the Bet Builder and add under 5.5 cards to a City win, and we can get around 10 to 11. So it shows you the market is sort of sleeping slightly on this card count, I think. The market is expecting there to be 5 points.
Emmett's sending an email as we speak. You can't see it, but that's what he's doing.
Yeah, I think that the market expectations across the board, across the industry, is sort of 5.25 cards, which I think is too high. I know if you run the data between the two teams from the games across all competitions and the Premier League and their head-to-head battles and stuff, you probably would get near 5.25 is the expectation. But I think the fact this is an FA Cup quarter-final isn't being factored into that price, and the fact we're going to get a one-sided encounter, I think. So, I would recommend backing under 5.5 cards and a City win at around sort of 10 to 11. But you can also play just the under cards lines in singles, I think, and you won't go too far wrong. You can get 9-4 for under 3.5 cards, 5-1 for under 2.5 cards. And I wouldn't even put people off having a little nibble on the big prices for the game to show to have no cards, which is probably going to be around 20-25-1. So yeah, hoping for a routine City win and no cards, please.
Emmett's just finished sending his alert email, so he can give us his view on this game now. It does feel like a one-sided clash, and it is amazing. I mean, you've got to bear in mind that they've had so many injury problems, Newcastle, like an outrageous number of injuries, but they do look a bit broken, don't they?
They do for sure. Just on what Lewis was saying, I think the card markets for us are quite difficult to price because, like, it's the kind of the step in price of, say, for under 1.5 cards is this game is 12-1, under 0.5 is 66-1. It's obviously a huge price, but like sometimes the market doesn't it kind of those kind of tail outcomes where it's those kind of games where it's, say, a one-sided game and the ref just decides not to give any cards, or the game kind of goes in a certain way, like it's the chances of kind of 0.5 cards, the difference in price being under 1.5 and under 0.5 are probably too big, to be honest. And I think in general that there are definitely angles that you can kind of exploit with bookmakers, every bookmaker, and that's something just we have to combat as kind of a price in terms of our pricing. In terms of this game, yeah, I'd echo everything Lewis said. Like, just I could have mentioned this in the podcast before. That Newcastle's kind of away from home has been bad all season, and in the Champions League, they're 14th in the Premier League in away record compared to 6th in the Premier League. As you said, as you kind of alluded to there, Kev, like since Christmas, especially. Like pre-Christmas, they were kind of, their performances were a bit inconsistent, but they were probably getting a little bit unlucky with results versus performance. But since Christmas, their performance has been terrible. They've 11 points in 10 games and 26 goals conceded in 10 games. And in that game against Chelsea, which I watched, like, the two finishes from Murphy and Isak were brilliant. Like, they were like real low XG chances. They had, like, they only created 0.57 expected goals and scored two incredible goals from two brilliant finishes. And that kind of made the scoreline look far more respectable than it actually, than the game actually was. And as in terms of just Anthony Gordon, if you're playing that kind of reactive style away from home, you need players like Gordon to kind of get you up the pitch. And he's been their best player this season, I would say. The morning most consistent player. He leads Newcastle in goal involvements. Like, Newcastle only have three players with over 10 goal involvements to lead this season, and two of them are absent, with Kieran Trippier having 10 assists as well.
Yeah.
So it's just, this is a kind of a Newcastle team that are massively on the slide, missing most of their best players, and coming up against the best team in Europe. And I can't see anything other than a really comfortable, really comfortable Man City win. In terms of how I'd play it, if you're back in the Asian handicap, maybe a look at them, City minus kind of 175. So that's a half win if Newcastle win by two or more, and a full win if Newcastle win by three or more. But I wouldn't put anyone off look at the bigger priced options, such as City over 3.5 goals, 5-2, City over 4.5, 13-2, Haaland hat-trick. Although I think all those outcomes are in play, and what should be a really, really one-sided Man City win.
Let's change gears now. We're going to head to Germany. And of course, Mark O'Hare, it's going to be Bundesliga 2. We're going to take in a game between Hannover and Kaiserslautern.
Yeah, Saturday night football in the second tier of Germany. Hannover are in fifth. They're only 3 points off the top three, which is the kind of promotion places you want to be in at the end of the season. It's basically been built upon a very, very strong home record this season, where they've won 7 of 12 fixtures, losing just once. Only league leaders St. Pauli have a better points per game record at home than Hannover, and nobody has a better goal scoring record at home than Hannover, who are averaging 2.33 goals per game across their 12 fixtures they've played. So they've actually scored at least twice in 11 of those 12 fixtures. The only game they failed to score twice in was when they hosted Hamburg, who are third. That's the only top three team they've hosted. So, you know, you look at their record against the teams in fourth and below, Hannover has scored at least two goals in every game at home this season, which is exceptional, really. And it's backed up by the underlying metrics, which are very, very strong as well. So at home, Hannover are averaging 2 expected goals per game, almost 12 shots from inside the penalty area per game, and nearly 7 shots on target per game in front of their own supporters. They're also generating over 3 big chances per game at home. A big chance is what Opta describes as an opportunity where a player is reasonably expected to score. So they've been very, very good in forward areas at home. Yet we get the opportunity this weekend to back them at 1.8, 4-5 to score over 1.5 goals against Kaiserslautern. Now, Kaiserslautern have improved a little bit in recent weeks after a managerial change, but they still have only kept one clean sheet in 25. That came in their last away game at Rostock, who are down in the basement battle with them. And a red card was incurred to the home side on that occasion too. So whilst Lautern ran away quite comfortably in the end, you know, the red card absolutely sort of changed the game on that particular occasion. Kaiserslautern are conceding on average 2 goals per game away from home. 8 of their 12 hosts already this season have scored at least twice against them. So they have won back-to-back games, but both came against relegation scrappers alongside themselves. And last weekend, they beat Osnabrück, who are bottom of the table. They actually conceded twice at home to them as well. So, you know, it kind of highlights their defensive deficiencies, and they're coming up against basically the league's best attack on home soil. So 4-5, 1.8 on Hannover to score over 1.5 goals does really appeal to me.
Elsewhere, we'll check in with Bayern, because they won 8-1 against Mainz last week and didn't look very good. I know that seems really weird because they won 8-1, but actually in the first half, they were 2-1 up, and Brian Gruder of Mainz is a very good young player. Keep an eye out for him. Blazed one just over the crossbar, and if that had been 2-2, I think Bayern would have wobbled considerably. However, Harry Kane scored just before half-time. That completely changed the game. And then Mainz inexplicably kept trying to go for it at 3-1, 4-1, 5-1, 6-1 and 7-1 down. So, Emmett, this is a weird one, because Bayern are going to Darmstadt, who are useless. They're really bad. I mean, they're not up to this level at all. Bayern beat them 8-0, I think, in the reverse fixture, and Kane got that ridiculous goal from inside his own half. This could be horrendous, actually. This could be like a massive score.
Exactly. Yeah, that's my thinking as well. I was just kind of like, I think Bayern are expected to score like 3.15 goals against Darmstadt. Like, can easily see them kind of overcoming that rack of a big score. And just, I thought there might be a little bit of an angle in the goal score markets here with an old favorite, Thomas Muller. He reminds me of like movie fans here, the Al Pacino quote in The Godfather 3, like, just when you thought I was out, they pulled me back in. Like with obviously Silvio Dante famously did an impression of that in The Sopranos, a very bad impression, but a funny impression nonetheless. But with Muller, like, watching him for most of the season, I thought he was absolutely finished. And he, like, with his comments about Thomas Tuchel after the Leverkusen game, it looked like he was angling to become Bayern manager more than he was offering as a player. And similarly, a few years ago, before Bayern won that Champions League under Hansi Flick, I thought he was finished again. And he had a really big renaissance under Flick, and he was one of Bayern's key men when they won the Champions League that season during COVID. And I was just really impressed with him in Bayern's second leg against Lazio. I thought he was their key player. Like, he was making these really typical Muller kind of clever runs, and he was kind of, and he scored one and set up Bayern's first goal, which was crucial, because anyone who watched that game will know that that was a really nervy opening period where Immobile missed a decent chance. And if Bayern had conceded first, they could easily have gone out, given the kind of fragile state that they're in. I think Muller is playing really well, and I think he's playing in a very advanced kind of second striker position, which maybe at times he's played wide or maybe played deeper as a kind of a linking 10. But he seems to be playing quite high, and he scored two goals in his last two matches. And you can get him here again to score here about 15 to 8, which I think looks a little bit big given the weakness of the opposition and just how high he's playing. So it's kind of one of these things that in subsequent week, if Muller gets maybe two or three goals in Bayern's next few matches, it's maybe a price that we won't see in future. So that's worth a look in what should be a very one-sided beat-down.
Yeah, and he's closing in on what would be Bayern's record appearance maker. He's only a handful of games behind Sepp Maier, which is 702, I think, Maier got. And he was a goalkeeper, so it'd be some effort from Müller to catch him. Now it's time for the world-famous podcast Treble, a feature so revered that Netflix tried to make a documentary about it, but they decided that 3 hours of watching Mark O'Hare compile his ratings on a computer wasn't quite as gripping as Squid Game or Stranger Things. How this works is each of the guys comes up with a selection ahead of the weekend's action, and delightful traders like Emmett here wrap them up for you in a boosted treble. Lewis, I will start with you.
Oh, I'm tempted to put this second half most goals in the Spurs Fulham game, but I think I'm stung by half.
Do it if that's your instinct. Go on.
No. I'm gonna switch it. I'm gonna go for Reece Burke to have a shot at evens for Luton against Nottingham Forest.
Lovely. Mark, what have you got for us?
I'll play it relatively safe. I'll go overs in Fulham versus Tottenham.
Super. And Emmett, take us home.
Yeah, for the reasons already given, I'll go Man City over 2.5 goals, which should be a very one-sided game.
Yeah, that's going to be... I mean, maybe it won't be. Maybe we're all idiots and Newcastle ran away from the Etihad with a 3-0 win. They didn't. They absolutely didn't. Now, this has all been very well. It's been lovely. We've had some nice tips and all that stuff. Had a good time. But really, what you've been waiting for the whole time is Mark O'Hare's Scott Watch.
Oh, aye. Escort watch.
Mark, the floor is yours.
Okay, we're going to dip into Scottish League One this weekend. Montrose are flying high. They're third. They are the form team outside of runaway leaders Falkirk this season. And they're sort of aiming to solidify their place in the promotion playoffs this weekend when they host Annan Athletic. So Montrose have won 6 of the last 7. The only blemish in that winning run came at Falkirk. They've actually scored at least 3 goals in 5 of the last 6 games as well. So they're hosting Annan, who are second from bottom. The two teams playing out a really quite exciting 2-2 draw as recently as January. And I'm actually expecting goals again here, because I think if you look at the league table, you could be Wrongly thinking this game could be quite one-sided, but Annan have actually sort of found form themselves recently in their battle against the drop, and they are no slouches in front of goal either. They've only failed to score away from home at Hamilton and Falkirk this season, the top two sides in the division. They've actually scored in 24 of their last, or of their overall 28 league games this season, despite sitting second from bottom. So the issue really is defensively, where they've managed just two clean sheets all season, 30 goals against in 14 away games. You look at Montrose, overs have landed in their last six. Eight of their most recent 12 have seen both teams scoring. Annan have seen both teams scoring in 22 of 28, including 12 of 14 away. So, as I say, they've shown signs of life in recent weeks. They drew 1-1 away at Falkirk. They actually beat Hamilton 3-2 away from home as well. So I think they're dangerous underdogs here, but I think the most palatable play here is to back over 2.5 goals and both teams to score at evens, expecting it to be relatively high scoring and entertaining there. But the Culture Corner was a difficult one this week. Montrose, I put a focus on them. They are the 18th oldest football club still in existence in Scotland. They still play at Lynx Park, a ground they first went to call home back in 1887. Incredible, wow. Really. So their best days came in the mid-1970s, where they finished third in the old first division. They were quite a respected cup side as well, reaching the League Cup semi-finals and regular sort of quarter-final Scottish Cup appearances during that time. But then they fell away really quite badly, and they've been sort of lounging around the bottom two divisions in the last sort of couple of decades, really. But that was until Stuart Petrie was appointed manager in December 2016. He is still there now, and he steered the club away from being rock bottom of the SPFL pyramid, winning the League Two title in 2018. Which saw them end 22 successive seasons in Scotland's fourth tier. They've since been regularly achieving top four finishes in League One, and they're on course for another this season. So he's done an incredible job there across the last, seven seasons or so. They're nicknamed the Gable Endies, which isn't actually that interesting, really. It actually refers
He's ruining his own section.
I know. But I'm always interested by these Scottish nicknames, and when you kind of get to the crux of it, sometimes it's not actually that exciting. This is underwhelming. The Gable Endies is basically just refers to the continental style in which the town's wealthy houses were built back in the day. The gable end to the street. So, you know, if you've no interest in football, but you come from Montrose, you're nicknamed a Gable Ender, and hence the football team are the Gable Endies. But there wasn't that much exciting or interesting stuff to share about Montrose, really. But I did find this fascinating piece of knowledge that Montrose is the home of the widest high street in Scotland.
doesn't get you. Who's measuring this?
Exactly.
Who's going around measuring high streets?
Marco has been there. He's done it.
Have you put this into your computer? Have you done ratings of how wide a high street is?
No. That's about as interesting as it gets. Or this one, you might like this one. I don't know. Are you a Potter fan, Harry Potter?
Yes.
You should be well aware then that apparently there's a professional Quidditch team from the township of Montrose. They're called the Montrose Magpies.
Yes, because I actually was at Harry Potter Studios last weekend. I think I might have seen one of the... Because they had to do a load of flyers for Quidditch and they had to do a load of stuff. I think they may have been on there. Oh, there we go. See, it was quite exciting. Scott watched this week. You did it down. We had wide high streets. Who knew that people measured high streets? Is it only the width to do the length?
Talking of wide high streets or wide roads, I need to sort of lean on Emmett a bit here, but is O'Connell Street in Dublin the widest street in Europe or something like that? I'm sure I heard something like that when I was younger. Made that up?
I couldn't confirm or deny that.
The look of panic in Emmett's eyes there. Why do I know? I don't know.
There's some homework for you, Emmett. Find out if O'Connell Street is the widest street in Europe. I suspect it's definitely not, because having been there a few times, I didn't think it was as wide as it probably should be. But
that was like when American tourists come to England and ask random people if they know the Queen. That was that kind of vibe there. you're Irish, you'll know if it's the widest street in Dublin. Yes. Well, there we go. Well, if you do know, let us know in the comments underneath if you're watching on YouTube, or, you know, get in touch with Betfair's social media. Wide streets.
Quality content, this is.
Let's open up the debate about the widest streets around. That, sadly, and I know you'll be gutted about this, all we have time for on this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. Remember, all of our shows on Betfair's new YouTube channel for non-racing content. So make sure you like and subscribe. We've got the Sunday show coming up, which features Manchester United against Liverpool in the FA Cup. Loads of good preview content from Europe and domestic football as well on our website, betting.betfair.com. From Emmett, from Lewis, from Mark, and from the wide streets of Montrose, it's goodbye for now.